Blog Talk Radio.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. We are so glad that you are here with us tonight. It is, of course, a very special evening. Now, we are so delighted to have with us tonight a special guest. He has flown all the way from Australia to help us discuss what we discuss here on a nightly basis in such fervor and excitement. This is going to be an incredible evening. I'm so glad you're here. It is hard for me to convey the amount of excitement that we have for this gentleman coming tonight. But you are going to be stunned. Stunned. At the things he says and does, all for our favorite topic. And this topic, you and I speak about every night. And we love it, don't we? We sit here night after night on this show and we go over it and over it and over it. And we know what it's all about. And this guy, this wonderful guy from Australia, he's going to talk about it. It's going to be incredible. You know, heck, every one of you knows the name of the show. Every one of you knows what we talk about. He's going to talk about it in great detail. It's going to be the best. This is going to be a great show. Wait a minute. That sounds like a show about nothing. This show is about to have some stuff.
But they don't fall down. Pass it on.
This space is for rent. How much are you willing to pay?
Cool, Sir Oliver Goatee.
And down and over and out, and I know one thing,
Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
Crazy, mad, insane world.
Easy to bitch, easy to whine, easy to moan, easy to cry, easy to feel like there ain't nothing in your life. Harder to work, harder to strive, harder to be glad to be alive. But it's really worth it if you give it a try. Easy to bitch, easy to whine, easy to moan, easy to cry, harder to work, harder to strive, harder to be glad to be alive.
It takes one to know one. Jack rules. Here is your host, Jack Hatfield.
People trying to be president. We got a president on the screen. We've got big legislation, and of course we all know that we have to vote for it now. It doesn't matter. We got to pass it right now. It doesn't matter that we have one in our hands. Nothing. It's just got to be passed. So I'm telling you that no matter what, you've got to be listening to this show. All right. We've got three segments to this show tonight, and they're going to be longer segments because two of these are very, very, very important. We're going to start off with one of the longer segments right off the bat. Now, we don't even have time to go and start making jokes about stuff like this because this is serious, and I really, seriously need you to pay attention here. Okay? So, with that in mind, get ready. It's going to be good. It's going to be serious, but I know because you're smart listeners, you can handle it. We have full knowledge that our listeners are absolutely some of the smartest listeners in the world. Now, we do know some listeners come on, right, that listen for a little while and go, I just don't understand. And that's fine. That's perfectly fine for you not to understand. It does take more than one listen to understand what we talk about most of the time, and it takes more than one listen to even get close to figuring out what we're really all about. So, without any further ado, I've got to get to this part, okay? We are not going to rest until this is fixed. Now, the FDA, your friend and mine, we speak about them all of the time, all right? Here are some facts. Back in the early 1990s, right, consumers were so alarmed by the FDA bullying that you and I and everyone that loves to have health in our own hands actually staged a massive revolt. Now, that revolt caused Congress, that's right, Congress to pass a law prohibiting the FDA from banning popular nutrients as the agency had threatened to do. Now, why, ladies and gentlemen, let's just go into this for just 2 seconds. Let's go into some thinking. We talk about the FDA all the time on this show, but let's go into some serious looks. And we know the FDA will pass a drug and let it go and be on the market and commercials for it. And then suddenly you're thinking you need to go to the doctor and take it. All right. And then 2 years later, it finds out, oh, that drug's killing you, like the diabetes drug Avandia that now causes you to die of a heart attack. You don't die of diabetes. A heart attack kills you. No big deal. We talked about that on this show a long time ago. But the FDA, that's how it works. You give me money, I show you my power, you go peddle your drug. If anything happens, you pay for that drug breaking stuff. That's how it works. Now, why would the FDA suddenly say, you know what? All these people that are taking the health care of themselves and living longer and living better and going and taking vitamins and finding out what things are good for them, why would that be bad for us? So anyway, back in the 90s, the early 90s, the FDA was really, really clamping down to cut your popular nutrients out. And thank goodness we all staged a massive revolt and we stopped them. However, guess what they did when that law was passed? There was a small little loophole. The FDA was given authority to regulate ingredients introduced after October 15th, 1994. Okay? Now, until now, the last 17 years, the FDA's silently been sitting on the sideline going, you know what? We caused a massive revolt when we tried to do this last time. Let's not mess with it. Let's not mess with it anymore. So for 17 years, the FDA basically, you know, stayed silent, stayed out of our lives, went about its business of giving us crap drugs. I mean, good stuff, right? But now, as many people kind of feel, the government is slightly overreaching, or at least this this round of government is slightly overreaching, correct? Excuse me while I drink my libation. So the FDA just sat around and said, you know what we're going to do? We found that loophole and we're going to use it. So it issued draconian proposals as to how it intends to regulate what it now calls new dietary ingredients. That's right. Anything after 1994 can now be exposed as a new dietary ingredient. That's right. Something that came on the market on October 16th, 1994, which you and I have been taking for the last 17 years, improving our health. And remember, market share dictates this, not what you can get at a doctor or not what's being given out as free samples to the doctor, but market share dictates this. In other words, you go take a supplement that's supposed to help your joints and it doesn't, guess what's going to happen? You don't go buy another bottle. But if you go get a supplement that you get for your joints and suddenly your joints feel better, you're going to go buy another bottle. And then you're going to tell somebody, you know what, I've been taking this stuff, and it's really helped my joints. That's great, Bill. What's the side effects? Well, I don't know. It's all natural. It's not a drug. It's not synthesized in a lab. So I don't think I got any. Oh, okay, Bill. Well, I'll go try it. So the other guy goes and tries it, loves it, buys another bottle. Goes tell another guy. That guy says, you know what, I'm going to go buy a bottle. So he goes to the store and he finds out that bottle's $25.99. He says, that's a bottle with the same ingredients right there. For $14.99, he buys that bottle. He comes back and says, Bill, you know what, it ain't worked for me. He goes, wow, Frank, that's amazing. It's worked for me. Look at me. I can jump up and down. And this is hard to do for a 142-year-old man. And then the truth comes out. He says, well, I didn't get your brand. I didn't get super duper mega joint pill. I got sort of super mega joint pill. It was a little cheaper. Oh, Bill, that's not the right one. Oh, well, suddenly, after 17 years, super mega joint pill is still on the market because people are buying it because it's working. Sort of sucky mega joint pill, kind of not there anymore. Might be still made under other names like Super Sucky or, you know, cheaper than the other guy. Or we put it together with fish scales and sand. Something like that. But you're not going to buy it anymore. The market makes these things work. Okay? Just like we had the same little problem when the FDA came out and said, you know what, we're going to ban Four Loko. In theory, was anything wrong with Four Loko? No. What was there something wrong with? Oh, humans. Never mind. We'll get to that in a second. But this is important. I need you to pay attention. So now the FDA is now going to issue this, now issued a draft on the guidance of the new dietary ingredients. That's right. If implemented, some of the most effective nutrients you are taking, that's right, you are taking, I'm taking, can be removed from the market. And this is including many fish oil formulas and natural plant extracts that have just been discovered in the last 17 years. Okay? So this is very, very, very crucial. The positions articulated by the FDA in this draft can be expected to have a significant impact to all those who manufacture or distribute dietary supplement products. In other words, they want to kill some more jobs. What did he just say? He did not just talk about jobs when he's talking about nutrients. Yes, yes I did, because the second half of this show is all about that. But I digress. Back to this. In other words, if the FDA comes out with this guidance and says that the new dietary ingredient of anything not marketed prior to October 15, 1994, can be a vitamin, mineral, herb, or a botanical amino acid dietary substance for use by humans to supplement the diet by increasing the total dietary intake, or a concentrate, metabolite, constituent, extract, or combination of any of the above. That's right. It is defining the dietary ingredient as any freaking thing that you can take a little more of that you can't get in whole food. The only way you're going to be able to take this stuff is if someone does this. That's right. Here's what your FDA is going to do. They're going to require manufacturers and distributors of the dietary ingredient or dietary supplement that contains an NDI, right? The NDI is a new dietary ingredient. Got this? To submit a pre-market notification to the FDA at least 75 days before introducing the supplement into interstate commerce. Okay? Unless the NDI and any other dietary ingredients in the supplement have been present in the food supply as an article used for food in a form in which food has not been chemically altered. Okay? Let me rephrase what that just said. The FDI is requiring the manufacturer to notify the FDA 75 days before. Unless the dietary ingredient in the supplement, in other words, the ingredient in the supplement is present in the food supply as an article used for food in a form in which the food has not been chemically altered. In other words, you can have beta carotene that comes from a sweet potato. How many vitamins have that? Not many. When an NDI notification is required, it must include a history of use or other evidence of safety for the ingredient. Then, based on that information, Mr. Manufacturer, the FDA will sit around in their self. The FDA will determine whether or not it will file a notification with no questions asked. They'll respond to the submitter with questions. Questions. Or refuse to file the notification at all. Do you understand what I just said? The FDA's little committee of tight tails. The all-powerful, all-knowing FDRs. Wait, that's my new name for them. The all-powerful FDRs will determine whether it will file the notification with no questions asked or respond to this manufacturer with questions. In other words, they'll have additional questions. Like if you submit a form that says, no one's died for 17 years taking this degree and has cured cancer 972 times, they're going to send back a question going, what do you mean by cure? What is cancer? Or they're going to refuse to file the notification at all. In other words, the FDA can put this in a pile over here and just nothing. Nothing. Now, until now, the FDA has provided little guidance as what it considers that whole rule. Remember, present in the food supply rule? And to what type and quantity of evidence is sufficient to demonstrate safety such that the agency, the whole blah, 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 will permit the notification to be filed. Okay? So that I don't bore you with this wording, okay? The FDA issued a whole bunch of things, okay? They have sent out drafts and oppressive rules that are exactly what the 1994 law sought to prevent. Okay? In other words, they're saying, Congress, you passed a law forbidding me to do what I need to do, but since we haven't played well so far in the last 3 years, and I kind of don't like none of you, and we're trying to change the world, remember? We're going to do it anyway. Now, the FDA is currently using this authority in direct violation of congressional intent. But you know who's going to have to say something? That's you and me, because Congress is busy right now, right? Wouldn't you say? Now, the FDA is defining the dietary supplements as new as anything after October 15, 1994. Here's the problem. The FDA guidelines that they have modeled these draconian rules and outrageous safety thresholds are modeled after food additives, which is in direct violation of the congressional law because that classes dietary supplements as foods, not food additives, in order to protect consumer access to dietary supplements. But the FDA is sitting here saying, you know what? We're going to give it a new name. We're going to give it the new dietary ingredient. Do you grasp what I'm saying? Because the FDA monitors food additives, that's things, chemicals that doesn't exist in the world that are added to food to make your bread softer or your coconut wetter. Yeah, antifreeze to make your coconut feel wetter. What is he talking about? Anyway, those same food additives are the same rigorous testing that they're going to make every manufacturer of a supplement to conduct. That's right, expensive safety studies using absurdly high doses, which will definitely force many dietary supplement companies out of business, effectively eliminating competition to who? The pharmaceutical corporation. That's right. If your little herbal guy down the street who's growing the there's a great guy who runs a place where they do yoga before they make the pills and they put the tinctures together. It's an incredible little deal, and they're out there trying to give, I take two of their products, and they're trying to give people access to just the greatest herbs in the world. They're going to be forced to go and put a safety study on every one of their items. They have over 200 herbal supplements to help treat everything from bone pain to toe fungus. You see what I'm saying? And the FDA is going to do this. They're going to believe these new dietary supplements must be regulated similarly to synthetic food preservatives. Okay? Remember, this is direct violation of congressional action. They propose the new dietary supplement ingredients should adhere to aggressive safety margins, which are typically reserved for chemical compounds known to be dangerous in all but most minuscule concentrations. That's right, since food additives or preservatives such as aspartame, monosodium glutamate, sodium nitrate, all of these are known to cause cancer or severe health problems, the FDA has implemented safety guidelines which limit how much of that food can be in food. I mean, of that additive can be in food. Do you understand that? The fact that the FDA is trying to impose the same limits upon dietary supplements seems to be arbitrary and a little bit unfounded, right? In fact, when someone takes a dietary supplement, I went a little forward there, i.e., their intent is to positively affect the structure, you and I, positively affect the structure of what we got inside us and the function of our bodies in some way. Right? Limiting dosages of dietary supplements to physiological inert levels will defeat the entire purpose of supplementation with health-sustaining nutrients. Do you grasp that the RDA of vitamin C is like 100 milligrams or something? I don't remember at this moment, but let's say it is 100. And then some people are taking 10,000 to 25,000 a day to cure something. It's been shown to do something incredible. Now they won't be able to do that. Or they'll have to take so many pills it would be cost prohibitive. Unless, of course, if a pharmaceutical company comes out with Mega C to be prescribed by your doctor. Ooh, does that sound like money? Was that money I hear? Let me give you an example of how flawed this FDA guideline is. These guidelines are now so flawed that even nutrients shown to be completely safe in hundreds of human clinical studies would fail to accommodate the unreasonable safety margins. To give you an example, each manufacturer in these draconian laws of certain fish oils, that's right, would have to conduct, how many people take fish oil? How many people heard fish oil is awesome? How many people say, my brain needs fish oil? You go out and you buy fish oil. My joints need fish oil. How many people are taking fish oil tablets? I can tell you it sells over $20 million a month. But now every one of those manufacturers of the fish oil tablets will have to conduct a 1-year study. In other words, all fish oil supplements will be off the market until the 1-year study is over, where animals will be given the human equivalent of 240,000 milligrams each day of fish oil. But wait, the FDA is not all cold-hearted. They will allow you to do another option. Okay, if you don't want to do the 1-year study where the animal takes 240,000 milligrams of fish oil, by the way, if your fish oil pill is 500 milligrams, let me get my calculator out here real quick. 240,000 divided by 500. That's just 480 pills a day. Go look at your fish oil pill, ladies and gentlemen. 500 milligram fish oil pill is going to have to be given to an animal 480 times a day for a year. For a year! Do you think there might be a problem? I'm pretty sure that the animal will turn into a fish of some sort. And I can hear it now, the FDA going, your product caused the gills on the cat. Well, yes, sir. You basically DNA'd him differently with 480 pills a day for a year. But wait. Remember, they're not all bad. They have another option. The other option is a 90-day. Look at there. See, You can either take the 1 year way or the 90 day. And all you've got to do in the 90 day study is a 1,000 fold safety margin study in which two species of animals, not one, right? The 1 year study where you just pick an animal and just feed them nothing but fish oil, obviously. But their lesser known method is the 90 day method, where you have to take two, not one, but two animals. I'm sorry, I keep thinking of the two deodorants. So you take two of the animals, and get this, the rule states, one of them being non-rodent. So you can have a rat and a dog, or a rat and a cat, or a rat and a rhinoceros. Okay, so you take the rat and a beagle. Since they'll eat mostly anything, you must give them the equivalent of 2.4 million, not, I didn't say thousand, 2.4 million milligrams. I got to pull this back up. I got to do it again. 2, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Oh, it's just 4,800 pills a day for the rat. And a dog for 90 days. Now, I don't know about you. I don't know a single solitary animal, creature, plant space alien. I'm trying to think of all the things I've met. Gnomes. What? You're weird. I got people screaming I'm weird. Anyway, I don't know of anybody who can tolerate 2.4 million milligrams of fish oil. Let's see. 2.4 milligrams of anything. How would that affect your body? Pretty sure to be bad. So, by default, the FDA guideline will now make it impossible for your certain omega-3 supplements to be sold. Now, just so you know, the typical dose that people take when they take fish oil tablets is around 2,400 milligrams a day. 100 times less than what the one-year study proposes must be tested. And since these are not patented drugs, no supplement maker will be able to afford these safety studies, which means that many of the nutrients you now purchase at low prices will convert into high-priced pharmaceuticals. This is the problem. It appears that the FDA is claiming that the dietary supplements are unsafe, and in order to protect consumers, no one saw my quotes go up because we're on radio. But I'm going to attempt for you to understand that when I said protect consumers, I was smiling with the quotes up in a very provocative manner. So to protect consumers, just did it again, hope you got the visual, the agency must place a stranglehold on the dietary supplement industry by requesting exorbitant safety testing. And then these ludicrous safety thresholds are in excess of those required by pharmaceutical drugs, despite studies showing supplements are far safer. That's right. Do you understand that these draconian rules are higher and harder and in excess of those required by drugs? Here we go. Here's what we're talking about. In fact, in a report from the American Association of Poison Control Centers, why do we have this? Of the substances implicated in fatal poisonings in all of 2001, 84.6% with pharmaceutical drugs, with analgesics being implicated as the primary cause of death in 32% of fatalities. Okay? The dietary supplement death was 0.8% for all dietary supplements combined, even including substances such as dinitrophenol, which is the dangerous and illegal substance banned in 1938. In other words, an illegal dietary substance was part of that 0.8% of death, as well as ephedra. Also, the anti-asthma drug theophylline alone was responsible for more deaths, 66% more deaths than all deaths from all available dietary supplements combined. Do you understand? One anti-asthma drug was responsible for 66% more deaths than all dietary supplements that you go buy in a health store today combined. Yet the FDA wants you to go out and spend the money on a 1 year or 90-day safety test of 10,000 more percent, 1,000 more percent, or 10,000 more percent of what you would take on a regular basis. You cannot, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot sit on the sidelines with this. As a citizen, you and I, we've got a constitutional right to petition our government to redress our grievances. And in this case, what the FDA is proposing is a direct threat to your health and your longevity and your pocketbook and simply caring. That's right, FDA's. There's, like I said, there's a company where the people yoga and pray and do some mantra over the herbs before putting the herbs into the pills, the capsules. Do I know if that does any effect? I have no idea. But the fact that these people that created this company cares enough to do something awesome over their herbs before they give it to you tells me that someone still cares. Do you think the pills coming down the line of the asthma drug theophylline, they're sitting there doing yoga over? No, they're putting them in little free sample containers and going and popping them to every single doctor all around. And then suddenly when you go in and go, get, you know, doc, I'm having a little trouble breathing the other day. He goes, you probably got asthma here. Try some of these. Well, why would I suddenly have asthma? I don't know. You're the one who said it. Wait a minute, doc, hang on. Well, don't you hang on me. I'm the doctor. I just did a skit. Let me have more sip here. Here's what I want you to do. I have put a link on the tweet. I even put a link on the blue F. I'm not going to say the name of this thing anymore because it's just a crazy. There's even a link on the blue F. Click on that link. It gets you to a place from the Alliance for Natural Health. Okay? And then you put in your address and your zip code, and they'll find your legislator. And they'll give you your legislator's contact information, and they'll let you log a call to your legislator and give you exact words to say and give you ways to put letters into your legislator. The only way this was beaten in 1994 was citizens. The only way this was beaten in 1994 was the actions of you and I. The FDI's draft guidance is creating an unnecessary burden to all of the supplement manufacturers. If you are currently taking vitamins that you love and you're currently taking supplements that have changed your life, I'm going to tell you that right now what the FDA is proposing will force between 20,000 and 42,000 dietary supplements will be removed from the market, and it will increase almost 2 to 3-fold the supplements that remain. The other problem with these rules, when 20,000 and 42,000 dietary supplements are taken off the market, that means sales are gone. That will force companies to either close or do what? Fire people. Expert analysis have shown that this particular FDA review will cause a total economic loss of up to $39.8 billion every year. Do you honestly believe that this is in the best interest of us at this time? Do you honestly believe that the FDA is sitting around, you know what we should do? Stop those pesky supplements. They're in the way of my drug company money. That's exactly it. It's going to take action from you and I. I've already done my stuff. You can send an email to your legislators. The link is on the tweet. The link is on the blue F. I'll even say the link, but it's very difficult. Let me see if there's a better way to say this link. Yes. Go to www.anh, Alliance for Natural Health, anh-usa.org. You will see on their front page, supplements under attack, and you must click here to take action against two threats. So you need to tell Congress that the FDA, the FDA's, and their draft guidance of NDIs is bad for consumers. It's not just bad for consumers. It's going to make pharmaceutical companies bigger and better. You've already seen the ad for the omega-3 super fish oil from a pharmaceutical company, correct? And you, I know to yourself, you sat there and you said, wait a minute, whoa, hey, what makes, why? Why would that be? Why would that be coming from a big, why would that be by prescription only? What did they do to it that made it have to go by prescription only? Now, the to give you another hit, the law enacted in 1992 that Congress needs to renew every 10 years, and the next renewal is for September 2012, is the Prescription Drug User Fee Act. Just in case you kind of had a weird idea about the FDIs, the Prescription Drug User Fee Act. I don't remember the news outlets talking about this. Do you? Anybody? No. Anyway, what it is it authorizes the FDA to collect fees from companies to expedite the drug approval process. That's right. Under this authority, the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, pharmaceutical companies pay fees for certain new human drug applications, biologics applications, and supplements submitted to the agency for review. And the FDA's review... Excuse me. The FDA's review of an application cannot begin until the fee has been submitted. The fee has been submitted. That's right, Mr. Drug Company, we're not even going to look at your crap until you give us some dough. What is this application I'm looking at? This guy wants to sell what? Cilantro in a capsule? Has he paid his fee? Now remember, Congress needs to renew this act every 10 years. The next deadline is September 2012. And to make this happen, the FDA has been performing its usual ritual of begging and blustering Congress. What? That's right. The FDA's, got to keep my own name here. If anybody starts using that tomorrow, remember where it came from. FDA's has been discussing a raise in the FDA's user fees with industry since July 2010. That's right. In fact, pharmaceutical companies that have already agreed to a 6% increase in fees for new drugs through 2017. And that increase is expected to produce an additional $40.4 million in user fee revenue in 2012, and then in 2013 to $712.8 million. Now, how could that be made larger, ladies and gentlemen? How could the pharmaceutical fee be made larger? Oh, wait, that's right. If you kill the supplement industry and the pharmaceutical industry was able to go grab the cilantro pill and come and pay the fee, and suddenly that pharmaceutical company takes the place of your local little guy. Are you grasping this? Drug companies fully provide 60% of the FDA's drug review costs. In other words, the FDA's entire budget, not entire, the FDA's review and regulation of pharmaceutical drugs is largely funded by the very drug companies under review. Is this a reason why the FDA is apparently so biased against supplements, which it regards as competition to these drugs that pay its bills? Or is it telling us why the drugs the FDA approves are so dangerous that they kill 50,000 Americans and send 700,000 more to emergency rooms each year? Now, the Prescription Drug User Fee Act is normally not a bill that goes all by itself. It's always been a slider. This bill has always been a slider on other bigger bills. It's never been something Congress actually votes for or has to put on record that they did vote for ever. Do you understand now why you must help me? Why you must help you? Remember, I've got a premature daughter. Without supplements, I'm positive that she would not be as far advanced as she is now. Without supplements, I'm positive I would still be in intense pain. Without supplements, I'm positive my mother would have not been here as long as she was. So at the same time, FDA is silently looking to Congress and going, hey, we're going to ride this puppy right up under here on another bill, okay? Just somebody slide it in. Hey, you slide it in. You just slide it in there and it'll be fine. We'll get our money. They'll still have to pay their fee. And I'll take you out to dinner and buy you some fancy stuff. Oh, and by the way, we found a way to increase that. We found a way to increase this fee. Because we're going to kill all supplements. And they're going to have to pay lots in fees. Sometimes doing this radio show and telling you the bad stuff is painful. Go today, right now, help me out, help yourself out, help out, think about your aunt or uncle or grandparent that's come to you and go, you know what, I just bought this supplement, it's feeling fantastic. I just turned my dad onto a supplement and he is now off all, what are these things called, the purple pill or whatever, the reflux medication. I gave him a supplement and he goes and buys it and he takes a shot of it. In the morning and night, and guess what? He stopped taking his purple pill every day, which has been shown to cause undigested material to leave your stomach, not absorb enough nutrients. Your body starts not being able to know how to eat. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. When you take a pill that tells your stomach it can't do what it's supposed to be doing, you're hurting yourself. And then if you put processed food on top of that, where it has to really, really, really work harder, that processed food is going to take a little bit more chunk out of you because it's going to go through more unprocessed than ever before. And my dad, taking one little supplement, within 2 weeks was off all reflux medication. And he said he hasn't had one single bout of pain. And he started taking it because one night he forgot that purple pill right before he went to bed. He said he woke up at 2, thought he was dying of a heart attack. Because his stomach was able to produce it probably didn't even produce what it normally wanted to produce. It probably just said, hey, wait, I can do something. Hey, look at here. I can do a little bit more. Feeling better. Ha, ha, ha. Well, stomach started doing what it needed to do. Rest of his body was like, hey, 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 what's this stuff? You don't do this anymore. This hurts. And I said, that's because that drug is designed for you to have to force you, must take it every day. Doesn't that sound like something you want to do? Guess what? When he misses the supplement day, he still has no heartburn. He admitted to me, hey, I missed it the other night. I didn't have any heartburn. But the supplement, something he can go get at a grocery store. Ended his heartburn, his reflux. No more doctor visit. That cuts off. Wait. I'm not supposed to talk about it cutting off the purple pill drug. I don't know about you, but if you go down the store of your grocery store, you go down the pharmaceutical aisle, that purple pill drug takes up half an aisle. www.anhalphanancyherald. I'm sure it's not Herald. -USA, and I'm not even going to enunciate those. USA.org. Go there. Do what it takes to tell your Congress to stop it. And also, ladies and gentlemen, you're also going to fight about the Dietary Supplement Labeling Act that has been introduced in the Senate. And it was introduced because of the Lazy Cakes Brownie controversy, right? There was nothing in Lazy Cakes. But someone said, hey, let's never let a crisis go to waste. So the bill requires the FDOS, together with the Institute of Medicine, compile a list of dietary ingredients that could lead to adverse effects or otherwise deem risky in some way. But by creating a list of bad ingredients or bad doses based on completely arbitrary or non-existent standards, is a very slippery slope, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a minor change to the Congressional Act. This is the FDA giving itself new major powers to even curtail supplement sales even further if the other bill doesn't get passed. Do you understand this? Almost every one of the bill's provisions are already covered by existing law, ladies and gentlemen. There's no need for this new legislation, especially with the vague language in this bill. The entire whole process of vague language in all these bills is exactly what you heard from former Speaker of the House when she said you've got to pass the bill to know what's in it. That should scare the absolute daylights out of you by your congresspeople. So if the Dietary Supplement Labeling Act with its vague language says, guess what, the FDA can do blah, 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 vaguely, then suddenly the FDA issues new guidelines from the blah, blah, blah that turns into 9,426 pages of regulations to the supplement industry, therefore curtailing more supplement sales. This is trying to pass just in case the other one doesn't pass. www.anh-usa.org. Ladies and gentlemen, bookmark that place, and every time there's a problem, you need to go there. The Alliance for Natural Health. We have to stop this attack. Freedom has got to stop being taken away. Let's do a couple quick stories of fun prior to getting back to the other tough, long segment about jobs. Until then, let's do a couple fun stories, shall we?
I got a crazy wife. I got a crazy wife. I got a crazy wife.
All right, crazy wife, here's something you need to understand, ladies and gentlemen. A French man has now been forced to pay his ex-wife a settlement for a lack of sex. The payoff in this case, an award of nearly $14,000 to the ex-wife whose needs were apparently not met. Under France's civil code, married couples are supposed to live a shared communal life. A judge has now ruled that this implies, I love this, I love vagueness and implications and what stuff is supposed to, what could be implied with these words. The judge rules now this implies that sexual relations must form part of a marriage. The women filed for divorce 2 years ago, citing lack of bedroom activity as the reason. And a judge in Nice, France, agreed with her, ran the split, and placing the husband solely at fault. Then the ex-wife sued him for not having enough sex over the 21 years of marriage. Her former husband said it was because of tiredness and health problems. A judge in South France's highest court again sided with the woman and said that the sexual relationship between husband and wife is the expression of affection they have for each other, and in this case it was absent. By getting married, couples agree to sharing their life, and it clearly implies they will have sex with each other. Clearly implies. Love those two words together. So, men, you've got to continue to boink the wife, or she'll sue you. It's that simple. And here we're going to put this on the back of this new survey. brand new survey shows men's need to cuddle while women just value sex. What? Wait a minute. I thought women were the cuddlers and men just wanted to sleep or something. I don't know. But no, according to the Kinsey Institute, and we all know how we spoke about the Kinsey Institute, they find that kissing and hugging were more important to the happiness of men than women. Right. They study relationships in 5 countries. The researchers were asked to fill out questionnaires about their satisfaction with their relationship and sex lives, revealing, for instance, men who reported frequent kissing and cuddling with their partners were 3 times as happy with their relationship as men who reported limited snuggling. For women, it showed tenderness did not have much impact on relationship satisfaction. However, both men and women reported frequent touching, kissing, and husbanding, as well as higher sexual functioning and more sex, were more likely to be sexually satisfied. In other words, women said when there was more sex, they were sexually satisfied. And in fact, women said when sex got better over time, they reported significantly more sexual satisfaction after being with their partner for 15 years. So for women, here we go, key factors for relationship duration were their own good sexual functioning. But for men, there was a large variety of contributors to happiness, longer relationships, good physical health, good sexual functioning, the wives' sexual satisfaction. That's right. The man actually put down he liked to watch his wife have the sexual satisfaction. The woman did not say that she cared about how the man was. Very interesting. Very, very interesting survey. And in fact, a man's happiness rose 17% with each additional point he rated the importance of his partner's orgasm. So, ladies who were not happy sexually might not be married for so long. Men who were cuddling and got the other good stuff and saw the happiness in the female were happy. Interesting survey. Interesting survey. And ladies, in case you just heard all that and you go, you know, Ryan, I am not getting any sex from this guy. I'm going to sue him and then I'm going to go find somebody else. Go out there and look for why. Go look for men, but don't get snow because men with deep voices makes a more lasting impression on a woman. That's right. Men who sound like Barry White or James Earl Jones can get ahead in the mating game because women remember a deep male voice. Women are very sensitive to the pitch of a voice and will remember a deep voice above higher tones. Then, depending on what they remember, they can choose or reject you as a potential mate. A study in Scotland proved for the first time a low masculine voice is important to the accuracy of a woman's memory and subsequent choice of mate. Therefore, the rest of the show will be made in low tones so that our women listeners will enjoy it even more. No, that's not true. I'm going to go on and scream like I always do when it gets important, especially with the second half, which is very, very crucial to be doing here in a second. Trust me, I am about to do that. But, so women, you're going to remember men with lower voices. Proven fact. Okay? Okay. I'll talk about these in a few minutes before I get to the bad stuff. But first, we have to talk Adele Omane. That's right, Adele Omane. She's the gorgeous Irish, lives in Britain now. Life expert that gives you an entire year's worth of training in her 5 magnificent minutes.
Welcome to Adele's Magic Minutes. Each week I will be bringing you messages with help and advice around becoming a conscious creator. And I also will be here to answer your questions on any area in your life that you find that you have resistance at the moment. So please post your questions through to the Jack Hatfield Show, and I will answer them in the following week. Stop thinking with your head. Start thinking with your true energy. Open your heart. Give abundance. Be willing to accept abundance back, whether it be opportunities, offers of help, or inspiration. Appreciate that energy has attracted it to you. By the power of your creation, your desire, your love. When you align with energy, you will never worry about the how again. Your purpose is to find appreciation in whatever is your current experience. Be grateful for your desires as if they are already here. Then the important step is to recognize the coincidence put before you. Having the strength, courage, and belief in yourself to step forward and take action. Now, I get asked this a lot with people I work with, and they will say, well, how do I know what energy is showing me? How do I know when I'm going to manifest my desires? Energy is showing you constantly. Energy, as soon as you have a belief, a new desire that is your belief, it is taken into energy immediately. Energy starts to transmute that very second to bring to you the manifestation of your desire. But energy does this in experiences and opportunities because it has to work in the physical world. It has to work through these physical mediums. So there will be a series of experiences or opportunities brought to you which will eventually lead to the actual desire that you put out. Now, it's very important that you learn to recognize these signs. These are like, I call them, these are like points on a treasure map. And each point, as you match each point, you get nearer to your treasure. So energy is always showing you through, I call, conscious coincidences, because there are no coincidences. They are only conscious because they are the result of your desire and they are matching this frequency that you sent out. But what has to happen is you have to have the belief and confidence in yourself to not only recognize them, but to actually step up and say, yes, I recognize this. This is part of what I put out there, and I've got to take action on it. I know so many people who have absolutely amazing experiences and opportunities presented to them, and they see them and they say, oh, that was a coincidence, and they walk away and they leave them. And of course, energy will always provide more, but why wait? You know, if you want your desires, you want your desires now. So it's really, really important that you learn to have the confidence in yourself to recognize these conscious coincidences and step up. And as you step up them, you will see more and more coming into your experiences, more little similarities and conscious coincidences happening. And it's just having that confidence and saying, yeah, this is, I can see why this is happening, and I've got to do something about it. Because in energy, action equals change in a system. So unless you learn to change, you won't change your action. So the only way to change is to take action. And once you start to take the action on these, this in itself will bring you so much confidence. This will show you just how much of a powerful creator you are. So it's your time now. You match those coincidences and start taking that action.
Adele Amani's magnificent minutes, ladies and gentlemen. We are so pleased to have her as part of the Jack Hatfield Show. You have no idea. Be sure to check her out at AdeleAmani.com and follow her on Twitter and the Blue F. I'm sure she's on there. Actually, I'm positive, but I'm rooting for Twitter, Blue F. Anyway, the second hour is going to be a big one, and it's going to be political. That's right. A political segment is going to be longer than normal. What's that you say? Screaming because you're tired of hearing politics? And guess what? It all coming back to it, isn't it? I don't have time for this opener. I'm running out of time just to tell you all the things I need to tell you today. Was that laughter? Just here's an example. Here was one of my stories I was going to talk about today before I said to myself, you know what, I got to talk about this bigger issue. Contraceptive pill interferes with women's memory. That's right. Women who take the contraceptive pills are interfering with the way they remember information. They tend to remember different aspects of an incident than those with natural menstrual cycles. By changing a woman's hormonal balance, the pill alters the way she remembers information. The taking the drugs are less likely to remember details of an event, but instead retain its overall emotional impact. While the pill does not damage memory, it means events are remembered in a different way. Okay? They looked at how the pill made women remember a car accident compared with those who did not take it. The pill remembered more clearly a traumatic event that a boy had been involved and doctors had to reattach both his feet. Those not using the pill recalled more details, such as there was a fire hydrant next to the car, or the car was blue, or it was a girl, not a boy. Here's another one. Taking painkillers long-term triples risk of kidney cancer. People who take anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen for more than a decade are tripling their risk for kidney cancer. The study of over 125,000 participants were 51% likely to develop kidney cancer. Renal cell cancer, the most common form of kidney cancer. Aspirin was the only member among the group of medications that was found to be safe. Does anyone have an idea when aspirin was introduced to the market? Anyone? It was a long, long, long time ago. In fact, I'm going to look it up right now. The key ingredient in aspirin was white willow bark has been used and been proved to have been used since 400 BC. Do you think aspirin has had a safety study? Do you think aspirin has been proven safe for the last 200 years? How many people understand that ibuprofen and naproxen sodium are both less than 10 years old, I do believe? Ibuprofen may be older, excuse me. Uh, Ibuprofen was 1969. So that's 20 years. I'm sorry. No, it's 40 years. God, I can't add. And naproxen. Do, do, do. Ooh, no, there's no real answer here, ladies and gentlemen. Cool. I cannot find when naproxen was on the market. That is strange. Wonder what that's telling us. Okay, so you got aspirin been around since 1829, what was it? And then ibuprofen 1969 and naproxen unknown. Aspirin doesn't cause any kidney cancer risk. Okay. So if the FDA is sitting around saying, okay, drug companies, pay me a fee, we'll let your drug go through, and if it causes problems, you got to figure it out later. Got that? Now, I'm going to go ahead and start talking about the other big problem, ladies and gentlemen. I can't wait around any longer. All these other things that I could possibly talk about. You just walk on a little bit black coat. How many people are down here?
That's
39-year-old Chantel Fulmer had accessed personal details of patients and then took out loans of more than $100,000. Victims of identity death were cancer patients and transplant patients at the hospital where she worked. Think of that. That's what I was going to talk about some today. Those are just some of the highlights I was going to hit. But because the FDA is trying to do what it needs to do, I needed you to pay attention. So we talked in the first hour about the FDA and how they're trying to take away ear and eye supplements. Now I want to talk about this. A Carlisle man started eating raw meat at Walmart and putting it back on the shelves. Scott Shover, 53, started just simply eating meat, raw meat, from the shelves of a Walmart store. Eating as fast as he could and then putting it back onto the shelf. He ate a total of $24.53 of raw meat, actually. In the man's conviction picture, he had to gum the raw meat to death because he does not have any teeth. He is has no job, lives on the street, and was hungry. Elderly woman, 101 years old, is in tears as she's evicted from her home and her possessions are thrown in the dumpster because her son failed to pay her property tax. She had lived in this home for 58 years. She was rushed to the hospital after eviction over heart attack fears. That's right, 101-year-old woman was evicted from her home that she owns because she failed to pay the government her property taxes. Do you grasp the fact that the government can come and take your home that you own because you failed to give them a fee that you have to pay them for owning your home? The son ignored repeated warnings that they faced eviction, yes. He did not want to worry his mother. But officials came, evicted her, and threw her stuff in the dumpster in southwest Detroit. Is Detroit having problems, ladies and gentlemen? Now, we just heard of a man having to eat raw meat from a Walmart. U.S. homes are now shrinking at a fastest rate since record began as recession hits bricks and mortar. In other words, the U.S. average size of the homes has normally risen nationally for generations. In other words, 50 years ago, the home was a one-bedroom, 1,500 square feet. Now it's three bedrooms or two bedrooms and 1,800 square feet. I don't know what it is. But now, Census Bureau records show the decline in average square footage is the most severe since records began more than 30 years ago. American houses have fallen in size by more than 5%, a decline. Also shows a staggering number of hard-pressed Americans are having to double up in their homes with their families and friends, particularly to be trend among young people been hit hard by the recession. Among those aged 25 to 34, the astonishing increase of 25% in the number of people moving in with other families since 2007. The average sales price of a new home in 2010 was $272,900, a significant fall compared from the average sales price of $313,600 in 2007. The number of properties sold is down massively from 1 million in 2006 to just 298,000 this year. That's less than a third. The new homes built this year were only 65 square feet bigger than 30 years ago. And the National Association of Home Builders suggests house sizes will continue to fall until at least 2015 by another 5%. I don't know about you, but I don't like it. The U.S. poverty rate, 1 in 6 Americans now officially poor, as the poverty rate has climbed to a 27-year high. I told you this wasn't a happy, fun-go-lucky show. I want you to really go after the FDRs in the first hour, but now I'm really sticking it in your crawl here. 27-year high of poverty rate. 46 million Americans are in poverty last year. Medium household income falls 2% to $49,445. Homes are now smaller than they were 30 years ago. ...101-year-old ladies being kicked out of their homes. Homeless people having to eat raw meat out of a Walmart. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't getting fun. And it's time to get serious. The U.S. poverty files as released. I want you to grasp these stats here. Unemployment levels. Last year, 9.3. Now it's 9.6. Household income, $50,599. Now $49,445. People without health care, 49 million. Now 49.9 million. That's right. People without health care went up. Wait a minute. I thought we passed the thing. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. That's a whole different show. And we already had it. Poverty rate, 43.6 million. Now 46.2 million. That's right. Another almost 3 million in the last year. Yet I know for a fact that you had Debbie Wasserman Schultz on a TV program just last night saying the stimulus saved 3 million jobs. Created 3 million jobs. Created or saved. However they want to count it. I don't know. It's a lie. But if you're looking at these poverty files right here that just got released, anything they say that the stimulus was a success is a lie. And what was on TV yesterday and what was on TV right before football last week? Football kickoff was preempted by the American Jobs Act speech. It's time for our political segment, ladies and gentlemen. The American Jobs speech. It was a speech saying you must pass this bill. Guess what? There was no bill. Well, today the bill was held up, or at least the cover of it was, and said, here it is. I'm giving it to Congress. Everybody can read it. Well, now that we started reading it, we're finding out it's the exact same thing as the stimulus. If I just pointed out to you that we put $1 trillion into the economy from the stimulus, right? The last stimulus price tag was over $1 trillion, but it was estimated at $787 billion. This particular American Jobs Act is estimated at only $447 billion. Remember, their estimates are always low and wrong and horrible and never right. Did I say wrong? As a dog returneth to his vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. Proverbs 26. This isn't a dog returning to the vomit. This is fools returning to their own vomit. Two and a half years of stimulus has got us worse. I'm sitting here looking at my fellow Americans having a hard damn time. And now we have this American Jobs Act. They ought to call it lather, rinse, repeat. Okay, the prior stimulus did infrastructure investment, ladies and gentlemen, renewable energy investment, education spending, other proposals, right? Guess what this new plan has in it? Transportation infrastructure, in other words, a new name for it. School repair and modernization, in other words, a new name for education spending. And more house rehabilitation. It's the exact same plan as the prior stimulus. The prior stimulus, by the way, was called the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. This act is called the American Jobs Act. God, they got pretty names, don't they? The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act had $82 billion in more spending on social welfare programs. And this, of course, was targeted to favor the recently unemployed, where they went and extended unemployment benefits for 90-something weeks. The American Job Act extends the welfare expansion another year. Is that helping people gainfully go try to seek employment when they are simply going to continue to collect the check for another year? The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act 2 years ago put spending money in the pockets of consumers by reducing the rate of payroll tax collections. It targeted tax breaks for education, home purchases. You had your refrigerator freaking thing in there. If you bought better insulation, you got a tax break. You know, it had everything in there. Incentives to buy all new stuff. Incentives to buy those electric cars. Sold 248 of them. The American Job Act, guess what it does? It extends those same stupid things. How many of you want to go out and buy a new refrigerator because you get to take $200 off your taxes? When you're sitting there going, please don't let this refrigerator break. It's holding my ketchup. Now I'm going to go out and try and beg for a dollar. I can maybe go get some nuggets to come and use with my ketchup. This country's hurting and I can't take it anymore. And when I see this American Jobs Act, total piece of garbage to be laid upon you and I, the exact same thing that was laid upon you and I 2 years ago, 3 years ago, excuse me, Why is it the same? It's the only hammer in their toolkit. They have nothing else. The thing that they're sitting there saying, and blindly with their heads in the sand, is that the stimulus wasn't big enough. If we can just do it bigger, it'll all work out. Not only does the American Job Act does the same as stimulus American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, right? But it also raises taxes. That's right. This new American Jobs Act is a promise to cut your taxes by raising taxes. It goes after those dirty jet owners, which will make $3 billion. I don't know about you, but this whole thing costs $447 billion. $3 billion is less than 1% of that. Dirty corporate jet owners. Oh, it also takes capital gains down by $18 billion. And then it rapes oil and gas companies for another $40 billion, thereby making your what go up? Oil and gas. Oh, and the lie that it will never affect people making over under $250,000, it's now been taken down to $200,000. And it will go down further during the next crisis. Do you understand that if they go down to 75,000, which is the majority, the top 1% wage earners pay over half the taxes in the country? 49% of people in this country do not pay any income tax. But yet it's the dirty, greasy jet owners that seems to be our problem, huh? I cannot sit idly by and have this American Jobs Act in the media shown as a beautiful thing. And that if we don't pass it now, we're all should just be mad. What's the definition of insanity, people? Well, in my mind, the definition is doing something over and over expecting a different result. Well, right now, I think the definition of insanity is allowing someone to sit here and give you the same pile into your hand and you going, this is wonderful. I'm going to try to explain how government doesn't create jobs real quick. Okay? This is crucial. There is agreement that 70% of the jobs in the United States are created by small businesses, right? Entrepreneurs, small business, the people that I help on a daily basis. Let's say you're a small business person. You had an idea. You took a risk. You worked on your idea. You sold your idea, and you managed to make a profit from your sales. The key word here is profit. You had the profit so that you had enough money to put back into your enterprise. Once you had that profit, you could hire additional people. This is how small businesses expand. They make a profit, invest the profits in expansion by hiring people. Without profits, they cannot expand. Without expanding, they cannot create jobs because they're not hiring. So to extend the payroll tax holiday that this American Jobs Act does, that everyone's sitting around going, you know what, I have more stuff in my check. That's great news for the small business owner. But then the next sentence he says he's going to eliminate corporate tax loopholes. So if you're the small business owner, you're going, wait a minute, you're going to cut my taxes for my people, but then you're going to raise my taxes on the other hand? And what does raising my taxes do on the other hand? Oh, that reduces my profit. When my profits are reduced, the small business cannot expand and cannot hire. We have went against and demonized people that are trying to make a profit in this country, and I can no longer take it any longer. I look at people with my services, and I sit there and I go, how do you figure that I should give you this? Why do you figure the bank needs to just give you this? Why do you figure the store needs to just give you this? Without profit, nothing gets given, done, or accomplished. I can hear it. Yes, yes, I understand, people. There are giving, nonprofit, charity work. Yes, don't look at me that way. You understand what I'm saying. I can also promise you this, without charity work, without that charity making money, that charity stops existing. Wait, are you you're kidding me? That's not true. They're called nonprofits. If that nonprofit stops making a profit, go look at the profit of the American Red Cross, the American Cancer Society. Look at the profit there. Go look at the Pink Ribbon people. Go look at those people. The American Jobs Act. Is nothing. It is the same. I cannot sit idly by and allow this to happen. But it's not only just the same. It also has some very devious items in it. And being a technological person, these things are very important for you and I to grasp. Do you understand the American Job Act creates an entire new government entity? What? Why would it do that? What? Oh, this must be where it's creating jobs, right? Because they're now creating the Public Safety Broadband Corporation. Because in this American Jobs Act, they are reallocating the spectrum known as D-Block for use by first responders and other public safety uses. That's right. The spectrum was going to be auctioned off. But the government said, no, we're going to give it to first responders and other public safety uses on the public safety broadband network. And it grants the Public Safety Broadband Corporation the license for a D-block of spectrum in addition to certain spectrum held for public safety use by broadband technologies. That's right. The Public Safety Broadband Corporation will be created to promote the construction and development of a nationwide public safety network. Does anyone know what the... what is that department that was created right after 9/11? Wow, I can't believe that I'm lost here. Department of Defense or something. No, it wasn't Department of Defense. Department of Homeland Security. That's it. Department of Homeland Security. They were designed to promote the construction and development of a nationwide public safety network. Why in are we creating another one? Now get this. It says that this corporation is not an agency or established by the U.S. or District of Columbia governments. Can you believe that? The board of directors of the corporation will have a board of directors comprised of federal and non-federal members. Do you think how many non-federal members are going to be on there? How many of those non-federal members are going to be on this board that don't give a lot of money to the current politician? And the section will provide procedures for the election of these non-federal members. They must be qualified, terms of appointment, and other matters. And it also describes the officers and employees of the corporation and compensation for these said employees and officers. Do you think the Public Safety Broadband Corporation, designed to develop the nationwide public safety network, will have any power? Do you remember that I was talking about the American Jobs Act at all? That's right, I'm asking you. Do you remember that I was talking about the American Jobs Act where this nation, I mean this public, good Lord, forgot the name of it, Public Safety Broadband Corporation is created in this American Jobs Act? And its duty is to permanent self-fund itself. It does itself fund itself the first time, though, because it's going to give $50 million right? It's going to provide $50 million. That's the American Jobs Act, saving you money by giving $50 million to the National Telecommunications and Information Administration that will then transfer that $50 million to the Public Safety Broadband Corporation for expenses before proceeds from spectrum auctions authorizing this bill are realized. In other words, the permanent self-funding of this corporation. I want you to grasp what I'm saying. The Public Safety Broadband Corporation will permanently self-fund itself because it will assess and collect fees for network use. Do you remember that it was designed to promote the construction and development of a nationwide public safety network? Here's where funny money comes into play, ladies and gentlemen. The corporation will charge fees from the public safety broadband network capacity, whether public safety users or commercial users, on a secondary basis. It requires the fees cover the operations of the network after the initial expenditure of federal funds and proceeds from the fees being reinvested in the network. Here's another fun fact. Is this making you mad yet? This Public Safety Broadband Corporation is going to be created to create a network for public safety use. Then they are going to charge public safety users. Okay? So the federal government is going to give $50 million to create this corporation. They're going to then turn around and create this network for cops, firemen, policemen, first responders to use. But they're going to bill the states fees to use this new network to permanently self-fund itself. I'm going to repeat that, and I'm pausing here for you to think and to be shocked as I am. You should be appalled at what I spoke about in the first hour. www.anh-usa.org. And now I'm talking about the American Jobs Act, which is the exact opposite. I'm going to repeat what I just said so that you grasp this. The permanent self-funding of the Public Safety Broadband Corporation is to create a public safety network. It is then going to charge the first responders, firemen and police, a fee to use the public safety network it creates. This is where the American Jobs Act becomes a negative money less on the expense, ladies and gentlemen, because it's funny money. It's going to get $50 million to create this broadband network, but it's going to charge the states a fee to use the broadband network. Where are the states getting their money? Well, if they don't get it from the federal government, where are they going to have to get it to pay for their firemen to use this new network? Oh, it's you! But here's something even more insidious. The section in here is audit and report, where the Comptroller General will now have access to the corporation's financial records and will submit reports to appropriate members of Congress, President, and Corporation after an audit is conducted, and it will submit an annual report to Congress and President on its activities. It also forces the Departments of Commerce, Departments of Justice, and Department of Homeland Security to provide technical assistance to the corporation in carrying out its duties. In other words, all of you three departments already created, You go do the work for this new corporation to sit around and point and go, ha, 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 point. Now, here's something even more fun. The section, State and Local Implementation Fund, creates a State and Local Implementation Fund for the grant program authorized just a few minutes ago. That's right. There is a grant for states and localities to plan for the nationwide public safety broadband network. In other words, you don't the fees that they're going to charge states and localities to pay for this public safety broadband network can then go ask for grants. And that grant is authorized to spend up to $100 million. And this $100 million can be borrowed from future spectrum proceeds to operate the program before proceeds from an auction are realized. In other words, I'm going to give you $50 million to create something that you're going to get fees for, but since they can't pay the fees until they raise taxes, you can go give them $100 million to give back to you. This, I am reading the bill verbatim, ladies and gentlemen. And that's not all. The Public Safety Trust Fund section establishes the Public Safety Trust Fund. Now, we just had the State and Local Implementation Fund. That's $100 million. The Public Safety Trust Fund now provides $7 billion to build and operate the nationwide public safety broadband network, as well as conduct research to develop standards for the network. And specifically, $200 million of that $7 billion is provided to state and local grant program to plan for and implement the network. Wait a minute. We just had the State and Local Implementation Fund, which is $100 million. Now you've got the Public Safety Trust Fund, which allows another $200 million to be given to state and local grant programs to plan for and implement the network that we are giving them $50 million to create. Get this, then they're going to give them $6.5 billion to create the network. $6.5 billion to create a network. Now, that $6.5 billion will be spent on companies to go out and help them wire and build this network. Will that create jobs, ladies and gentlemen? In the short term, yes, it will. I have to be honest. The American Jobs Act will provide people to go out and wire some crap up in some localities and some states so that the first responders have to get on a new network and pay new fees. Now, these funds are available until 2016. And after the funds have been used, after 2016, the commission may deposit another $1 billion in the Incentive Auction Relocation Fund for the purpose of compensating licensees for cost incurred in repacking spectrum to make contiguous blocks available. In other words, if we didn't do it right, we can go get another $1 billion to redo what we did the first time when we spent the $6.5 billion and we gave away $300 million to the states and localities so that they could give it back to us in fees after giving them $50 million to start up the whole thing. And all of this creates a wonderful job of wiring some stuff up. Do you remember, ladies and gentlemen, that I was talking about the American Jobs Act? I just gave you 10 minutes of the Public Safety Broadband Corporation creation in this new act. Guess what else it attacks? The ancillary terrestrial component, authority on mobile satellite service spectrum licenses. Making the FCC directed to develop a fee methodology to collect an amount of these new mobile satellite services. What? Right. It grants the authority to the FCC, Oz. We've got one, FD Oz. Now this is the FCC, Oz. the authority to establish spectrum license user fees. And they're going to do that on the mobile satellite spectrum for ancillary terrestrial services. Do you understand that they can then collect fees for your GPS and your satellite radio and your OnStar and everything else that uses satellite? Do you remember that I'm talking about the American Jobs Act? Now, another subsection permits the Secretary to specify waivers for alternative requirements and provisions that underlie the Housing and Community Development Act of 1974 and the National Affordable Housing Act to expedite and facilitate use of funds. In other words, the Secretary will be able to go spend money on a project rebuild. In other words, the Secretary is going to get up to $15 billion in investments to put construction workers on the job rehabilitating and refurbishing hundreds of thousands of vacant and foreclosed homes and businesses. This is a Detroit project, ladies and gentlemen. They were going to go raise and destroy buildings that are vacant because so many people moved out of Detroit. This $15 billion is now going to put construction workers to go spruce up those broken down homes that no one lives in and no one wants to come back to because they can't afford to live in Detroit. And I can't believe that I have kept talking, running out of time, didn't even know I've done it. www.anh-usa.org, you must stop. If you take a vitamin and you like it, you must stop the FDOs from taking away more of your freedoms. And then this American Jobs Act is exactly not what it says. I just showed you that poverty, uninsured, everything that is bad has risen in the last 2 years. The American Jobs Act is an extension of that continuing. We cannot have that happen, ladies and gentlemen. Do not be fooled by anyone else. You come here for the truth. The Jack Hatfield Show, thank you for listening. It's tweeted, and it's on the Blue F. Thanks for listening. Most people have turned it off because they think that that music is normally ending the show, but I'm going to continue for a few more minutes. The American Jobs Act is the exact opposite of what it is, and I'm tired of listening to it. I just went through the bill. I just talked about how it's creating a brand new government entity that is diverting money back to itself from giving it to other localities and states, and this is how this bill is coming out and saying it's getting paid for. Do you understand how this is working? It's a complete and total and utter lie. You are being lied to your face, sitting there saying that you must pass this bill without anyone paying any attention to it. It's insane. Remember, this bill's only been out since yesterday, and I, lowly little nothing, has found all of this in it, and I could not hold it back. I was going to talk about all kinds of stuff. I heard one piece of something that was in this bill, and it made me go read, and damn if it wasn't true. You know what else it's going to do? The Community College Modernization Act, where it's going to give up to $5 billion to the Secretary of Education to use as she needs to give grants to, allowing the Secretary to give grants to, for a state to be used to modernize, renovate, or repair existing community college facilities. But you cannot use those funds to renovate, construct, or modernize stadiums or anything religious. There's a section in here called the First Responder Stabilization, and he's going to talk about how this is where it's going to hire more career law enforcement officers. Okay? What it does is it makes another $5 billion to carry out the program through fiscal year 2012. And it authorizes the transfer of another $1 billion to the Department of Homeland Security to provide grants to support the hiring of the first responder personnel. So in other words, $6 billion. That's how they hide it. Then the section also further permits another $8 million available to the Department of Justice for use for program administration and another $2 million to the Department of Homeland Security. You understand that it also adds another item to hiring without regard to race, creed, religion, sexual orientation, or anything like that. You now have to add unemployment status. So if someone thinks they don't get hired because they were recently unemployed, they now can go grab a lawyer and sue a company. That's in this jobs bill. Did you forget I was talking about the jobs bill? So did I. Because nowhere in here did I see jobs. I see a bunch of grants, I see a bunch of crap being given away, and I see a bunch of snow job money being blown back and forth on another corporation that's going to pay cronies and help out friends. Sickening, ladies and gentlemen. I can't sit idly by and have this happen. Now, if you listen to this 7 minutes after show of the show, thanks. And I hope to hear from you next week. Follow me on Twitter for more of this ranting and raving all week long.